Okay, so I believe that we will start. Welcome, everyone. First, a point of order. We have simultaneous interpretation kindly provided for this meeting. English is number one, French is number two, Français numéro deux, Espagnol numéro tres. Welcome. My name is Evelyn Astor. I'm an advisor on economic and social policy at the International Trade Union Confederation. I'm very happy to welcome all of you here today. This is a meeting amongst workers. It's a meeting to discuss, first of all, the importance of social protection for workers, but more concretely also what unions are actually doing in terms of promoting social protection, defending social protection against austerity, sharing your campaigns and activities. So I will pass the floor immediately to Madame Valerie Schmidt. She is acting director for the Social Protection Department at the ILO. I should thank the ILO and ILO ACTRAV for convening this meeting. She will give a little bit of an introduction explaining a bit the relevance of this network and the role of the ILO.
Thank you, Evelyn. Good evening to all of you. I'm pleased to start the opening of this network meeting. So this network, for those who don't know it yet, it is called Social Protection, Freedom and Justice for Workers Network. And it was created 2 years ago in 2017 with actually two ambitions. The one that was mentioned by Evelyn was really to fight for workers' rights, especially in the context of austerity policy measures. But also, the other ambition is also to promote the extension of social protection coverage and the right to social security in all the countries where there is still a huge gap in terms of coverage. And we heard, I hope you have participated in the first 2 days of the conference. We know, all of us, that 4 billion people are still uncovered, are excluded from social protection. And of course, this is a huge ambition, I guess, to fill the coverage gap. And for that, I mean, the discussions in at least the first 2 days, but I'm sure in the technical discussions today, it was also clear that we need, of course, the support, not only the support, the active participation of workers and employers' organizations, and also civil society organizations. So really the ambition is this, is to fill this 4 billion, to the coverage gap, which is of 4 billion people. And of course, to fight against austerity measures that will contribute to increase this coverage gap and to also reduce the adequacy of benefits and their predictability as well. For that, this network has developed a website with sharing information and trying to also organize regular meetings. Together with ITUC and ACTRAV is also trying to develop material or to complement the material that already exists, and because ITUC is developing a lot of resources for workers' organizations so that they can be more involved in the policy debates and concrete action in the field of social protection. But the idea is also to produce knowledge and also, I think, to document and to hear from you what are you doing concretely in the ground, in the field, to really defend workers' rights and promote workers' right to social security. And I think on this area, I think we would really like to develop more what we call small briefs, small country experiences like the Amusol. But we would really like to use all what you are doing so that we can disseminate as a good practice through the network and beyond the network as well. So I guess the purpose of this meeting is first to get to know each other. This is very important if we want to work together. And the second objective is maybe to have a frank discussion on what are your expectations vis-à-vis this network, so that we can, I guess, organize the work around your expectations, so that we can meet your expectations all together. Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie. I would like to now pass the floor to Maria Elena André, who is the director of ILO ACTRA, of the Bureau of Workers' Activities here at the ILO. And you are working very much together with workers, so it would be we would be very grateful if you could say a few words on the relevance of this network in relation to your activities.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Evelyn. Good afternoon to all of you. It's a pleasure to have the first face-to-face meeting of the network. It's been virtual so far. So I think it is very important that we put faces live and not just on the web. So I think this is very important. Valerie has already said why this has been created, and ACTRA has endorsed that and embraced that from the very first moment. I think it's important also to recall that this is the ILO in cooperation with the ITUC and the Global Coalition for Social Protection Floors. This was done in the context of our social protection flagship in the ILO. So I think it is an area which is very important for us to move ahead. I think the timing of the meeting is also very interesting and very appropriate, because this is done in the context of the Global Social Protection Week. And you are called, we are all called here to talk about how we can enhance workers' participation in social protection policy making, but also in the implementation, which is so relevant. Valerie has already given us some figures. I will not repeat them, but I have to say that they are dramatic. And if we want to make sure that inequality and poverty are tackled, and if we want to make sure that the 2030 development goals are achieved in the area of social protection, I think we need to do much more than what has been done so far. I will not dwell a lot on the world changing every day by the minute. You are confronted with that on your daily work in your trade union organizations. But I think it is very important that we are able to transform the challenges we have around demographic change, around climate change, around technological innovation, around globalization, into opportunities, because all these changes do not spare the world of work. We feel them every day in the world of work. And it is important that as trade union organizations, you are able, with our support, of course, to permanently share experiences, good or bad. I think both are important and relevant in order to define what is the best path to move forward and the best way to go forward. And it is also very important that workers' organizations are able to advocate for social protection in the context of the fora and spaces that you have the possibility to do that. SDGs 1.3 and SDG 8 are relevant, but every opportunity that workers' organizations have at the national level to promote the agenda of social security and social protection is fundamental, and it needs to be grasped, and it needs to be used. I'm not going to dwell a lot on what are the merits of social protection. You know them as well as I do. We know that it is an automatic macroeconomic stabilizer, especially in times of crisis and in times of unemployment and inactivity. It can increase employment opportunities at the same time as it contributes to reducing unemployment. It can support the active participation of individuals in the world of work, but also in the communities, because it can help have preventative and rehabilitative health care and the promotion of healthy styles, if we are talking about the health care role. And I think it's also important, and unions also have a role to play in that, because unions together with employers are often, and in many countries, the highest contributors to the social protection systems. It has an important role in supporting families, and in supporting families in terms of how they can support children in their development, and this is also a very important role because it offers benefits, it offers services, and the objective of the trade union movement is that these services are accessible, affordable, and of high quality. So these are all areas that have got to be part and parcel of the agenda. And, I mean, it is important to realize that in times of vulnerability, social protection needs to help people overcome those vulnerable moments of one's life. Talking about the gender balance in our table up here, I would not go without saying that it also promotes gender equality and it improves work-life balance. It's very rare that we have this in the ILO. but also it develops human capital across the life course, and it empowers and fosters adaptability. So it increases not just the individual resilience in terms of navigate life's transitions, because that's what people are going to be confronted with today already and more in the future. And I think it is very important that we have all these elements in our minds when we are talking about the role of trade unions in this regard. Now, one of the objectives of the 2030 agenda is that it becomes universal. Its universal character is fundamental. And I think that when we want to say that it's got to be universal, we have to say that this is an investment and not a cost. And that talk about this being a cost needs to stop. And there's no one better placed for that than workers' organizations in that regard. This was a point also highlighted in the study that was launched this week on measuring financing gaps. So I think this is also very, very important. Now, another important element of reference is the ILO declaration on the centenary and the declaration on the future of work. And it would be surprising if we would just go about not talking about that. So just a few points to recall the importance on this declaration, because it really calls upon all members to work individually and collectively, but on the basis of tripartism and social dialogue, and with the support of the office, this is where we come in, both Valerie and ACTRAV, in our aim of further developing the human-centered agenda in the context of the future of work. And this is important, because if we are able to strengthen the capacities of all people to benefit from the opportunities of a changing world of work, we need to ensure that this is done through universal access to comprehensive and sustainable social protection. I'm quoting the declaration. And that also the institutions of work provide adequate protection to all workers and also safety and health at work. Finally, this is back on the agenda, and it is so relevant and so important. Now, the declaration also talks about social dialogue and collective bargaining and tripartite cooperation. And I think that this is an essential basis and foundation for the follow-up work of the ILO in this area. So what else do I have to say to convince you? You're convinced, but to convince others, or to give you the arguments to go out and convince others that employers and workers' organizations have got to be part and parcel of the definition, the implementation, the evaluation of the social protection systems at the national level. And I would say that's probably the task we would like to give you. And to come back next year when we have the next meeting of the Social Protection Network in order to see what progress has been made, and in order to get there, how can we support you? What are the instruments that you need to support you in that regard? Well, the DG, when he opened the Social Protection Week, talked about the program and budget of the ILO and the fact that this is an integral part of the activities that the ILO is going to promote in the course of the next 2 years. Now, could ACTRAV do anything different? No. ACTRAV is here also to contribute to the implementation of that outcome and the outputs within that outcome. And I think that it is important that we may have the capacity to support you on your endeavors of the work that you have to do at national level in this regard. So we are here to assist you and to help you. And we are here to make sure that this is one of the priorities in the agenda for the coming years. Just a little bit of propaganda, which I think is important. Last Monday, we have launched our International Journal of Labor Research. Ursula is, and we have copies if you want. In that journal, one of the I would say the lines that guides the journal is the fact that unions have to be open and capable of embracing also transformative agendas, because this is not just the economy. This is about how unions are able to fit into the new challenges and into the new opportunities, and how far unions are able, also in the context of social protection, to embrace the agenda with a renewed look and with a renewed eye. And one of the points on this journal is the need to bet a lot more on young people. And we know that young people, because they work in the cloud, many of them, and in the gig and in the platform economy, are those that are more prone to have non-standard forms of employment. This is a challenge in terms of how social protection systems need to protect these people. I'm concentrating on young people, but it's not just young people. We know that there are other workers in the labor market that are also affected by this. But I think that... knowing that the digital economy and the technological change will be something present in the future, these are areas that we need to look into, and we need to make sure that the social protection agenda is part and parcel of this. So, any other reasons for the importance of this network? I don't think I should put more on the table. I think we've had enough. Now it's our responsibility, all of us, to make it live, and to make it have a meaning, and to make it also help us in the ILO to bring in the necessary issues that are part of your concerns and your daily agenda into also our work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Maria Elena, and I'm going to pass the mic immediately now to Raquel Gonzalez. Many of you know her. She is the director of the ITUC's Geneva office, who will say a few words from the ITUC.
Thank you very much. Evelyn, and good afternoon, all of you. It's a pleasure to be here. Room 4, you should know, is a particular room here at the ILO. It's the room where we meet as ILO workers group. So I'm really happy that actually we could have this room today for your meeting, which is, as Maria Elena mentioned, the first in-person meeting that we are able to organize, and it's indeed a pleasure for me to be able to say a few words. I'll be brief, because I think the most important thing is to listen to you here today. But I would like to say a few words on the importance of social protection. I think the first element I would like to mention and to recall is that social protection is a human right, and it's a human right recognized in human rights international bodies and also in international labor standards, and it is actually key to realize social justice. We know as well that social protection is a key issue for unions. Why? Because actually we also know that social protection is one of the four key elements of the decent work agenda. Maria Elena already mentioned some of the benefits of social protection. We know that it contributes to poverty reduction, inequality. It also helps to reduce vulnerabilities in the labor market. It promotes access to quality employment, promotes gender equality, fosters social cohesion, supports the formalization of the informal economy, and contributes to boosting the economy and supporting job creation, but not any jobs, but actually decent jobs. And actually, as Valérie already mentioned, despite the recognition of the benefits of social protection, in today's world, many challenges remain to actually make the right to social security a reality for all, and particularly for those categories of the population that are the most vulnerable. We know that 29% of the world population only 29% of the world population enjoys comprehensive social protection, and while 55% has no access at all to social protection. Unions play a crucial role in the development and extension of social protection system. Many of you will mention it later on. Many of you have been involved in campaigning for the extension of social protection and defending those systems in your countries when they are under attack. You have negotiated reforms of social security in tripartite committees, monitored the implementation of social protection reforms, and also, in some cases, administered benefits and services. A few words on the ITUC, because I have a double hat here in Geneva. I'm indeed the representative of the ITUC, but also the secretary of the ILO Workers Group. So I will start with the ITUC, and then I will say a few words on the ILO as well and the work of the workers group in the area of social protection. So the ITUC is, of course, fully supporting your efforts in actually campaigning for the ratification and implementation of international social security instrument, particularly Convention 102 and Recommendation 202 on social protection floors. The ITUC has also worked with many of you to identify possibilities for financing social protection. A global conference on financing social protection was organized last year. Several research reports and briefs have been produced to provide the economic arguments for wage increases to assist you in your campaign, and the ITUC has also worked with many of its affiliates to support them in consultations and negotiation at national level. Now, a few words on what is the ILO Workers Group doing on social protection. Well, the first thing is that the Workers Group has fully endorsed the horizontal and vertical extension of social security. So our argument has always been that we have to work on the two aspects. So we, at the same time that we ensure the effective implementation of Recommendation 202, we have to make sure that more governments ratify Convention 102, that remains the fundamental, if I may use this word, Convention on Social Security. And while indeed a number of governments have ratified this convention since the adoption of Recommendation 202, I think there is much more work to be done to achieve greater coverage of this convention. Maria Elena mentioned the Centenary Declaration. I will not repeat what she said, but just add one important element is that last November we negotiated the program and budget of the ILO for the next biennium, and the program and budget has retaken exactly the formulation that we have in the Centenary Declaration as one of its eight outcomes and program of work for the next 2 years, which is actually to promote universal access to comprehensive and sustainable social protection. But there is one very important element in the declaration as well, which is to promote greater policy coherence in the multilateral system. And I think this is particularly important in the area of social protection, when we know that nowadays international financial institutions, and particularly the IMF, are actually promoting an agenda on social security. I don't even think we should call this social security, because it's, you know, within brackets. But actually, they are promoting policies that go totally against, you know, the rights-based approach defended by ILO standard, promoting, you know, safety net against the universality of social security. And I think one of the challenges, I think, of the ILO, Valérie, and certainly of the union movement in the next years is going to be to watch out the IMF, the advice they give to countries, because it could really do extremely damaging, it could have extremely damaging effects at country level. I think I will stop here because I will not go into what is the network and why you are here. I think you all know about it, and I'm looking at the watch. I think we have spoken enough. I think you deserve now to get the floor, and I certainly look forward to listen to your debate. So thank you very much, and again, a pleasure to be here with you tonight.
Thank you very much, Raquel. Thanks to all of you. So let me just say a few words about how this is going to work now. The first thing is we intend for this meeting, even though it's short, to be an exchange. So the first thing that I think would be helpful to do is to do a brief tour de table, to just go around and understand who is here, and so that you can also identify each other. And then afterwards, we're going to invite up a couple of representatives from unions to come and present very, very briefly their experiences on a couple of specific topics that we've identified as important for unions. So issues around informality and extensions of social protection to informal workers, issues around austerity and the role of international financial institutions, future of work, among other issues. So, but let me first start, because I think it's important for you to also identify each other. Let me start by asking that we go around briefly. Can you please say the microphone your name, your organization, and which country you're from? That's it.
Luis Cotinguiba, Social Protection Department.
Hello, everyone. Victoria Giroux from the ILO Social Protection Department.
Hello, I'm Luisa Carmona, and I also work in SOPRO.
Bonsoir, Mahmoud.
Good evening, Mahmoud Nas, Secretary General of the Senegalese Social Workers. I'm from Burkina Faso, Workers' Confederation of Burkina Faso.
Anna, je travaille pour.
I work for the OSM as the coordinator for the African continent, social protection in African countries. I come from Benin and Rwanda.
Hello, Francis from ITUC Asia Pacific.
Yeah, Sulistri from KSBSI Indonesia.
Good evening, Bart Verstraten, WSM, NGO of the Belgian Christian Labour Movement and member of the thematic network on the right to social protection.
Gijs Huestaert, also WSM Belgium, and the same as Bart.
My name is Baba Aye. I work with the Public Services International, PSI.
Marie-Yvonne Nicole de la
CFDT, France.
Good afternoon, my name is Greta Katosic. I work for ACTRAV.
Hello everyone, this is Manju Gimari from Nepal, GFONT.
Hola, buenas tardes.
Good afternoon, Marcelina Bautista from the National Trade Union of Domestic Workers and the Training Center for Domestic Workers in Mexico. Good afternoon, Rafan Gasole, ECOTRAV, a trade union from Rwanda, where I'm the Deputy Secretary General.
Good evening. I'm GVD Tilakasiri from Sri Lanka, Free Trade Union Development Center.
Mirai Chatterjee, Director, Social Protection, Self-Employed Women's Association, SEWA India.
I'm Laura Alfers, Director of Social Protection at Women and Informal Employment, Globalizing and Organizing, WIGO.
Good evening. My name is Oksana Ambut. I represent StreetNet International. It's a global alliance of street market vendors and informal traders.
Buenas noches.
Good afternoon. Almanda Villatoro. I represent Latin America and the Caribbean in ACTRAV.
Hola, buenas tardes.
Good afternoon. Francisca Jimenez from the Dominican Republic, Vice President of the Autonomous Trade Union Confederation.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Manzi Eric. I come from Rwanda, General Secretary of Rwanda Trade Union Confederation. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Zhou Jie. I'm coming from the ILO country office in China and Mongolia.
Bonsoir, Jean-Dominique.
Good afternoon. From Geneva, Switzerland. I'm in charge of projects in Côte d'Ivoire, Senegal, and Guinea.
Bonsoir, je suis Madrigal.
Good evening. Madrigal, Françoise Médor, Secretary General, Deputy Secretary General in the Democratic Workers' Union of Senegal.
Ghislaine Saïd.
Please remove your headset from the microphone. Mm-hmm. I deal with social protection and equality in the International Trade Union Confederation for Africa.
Salut, camarade.
Good evening. UST, Africa and Cooperation for Development.
Good evening, everyone. I'm coming from Albania, from the Confederation of Trade Unions of Albania, KSSH. I'm Deputy President.
Thank you very much. Good evening. My name is Ursula Kulki, and I'm the Senior Social Protection Specialist in ILO ACTRAV.
Buenas noches.
Good evening. CSCA. I'm Secretary General, and I'm from Brazilian.
Good evening, Marina Monaco from the European Trade Union Confederation, Europe.
Buenas noches, Guillermo Zucotti.
CGT Argentina.
Everybody, my name is Damaris Mujica. I work as a programs officer with the Central Organization of Trade Unions, Kenya.
Good evening, this is Ramesh. I'm Vice President of General Federation of Nepalese Trade Unions, Nepal.
Good evening. I'm Reema Nanavati, and I represent the Self-Employed Women's Association, SEWA, and was one of the commissioners on the Global Commission on Future of Work.
Good evening. Youssef El Othmani from CSC Belgium.
Good evening, I'm Karuna Pal from the Social Protection Department at the ILO.
Thank you very much. So I think we've gotten everyone. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to invite up the first three union representatives to come and speak. We'll do a quick round of question and answers to share a little bit what you're working on. So I will like to invite up first Ms. Marina Monaco from the European Trade Union Confederation. She's an advisor there on social protection. Mr. Guillermo Zucotti, social protection specialist from the Confederation of Argentine General Confederation of Labor. And Ms. Damaris Mujica, who is the program officer for COTU Kenya and a member of the Kenyan Social Security Fund. So since we are in Geneva, I think we have a nice distinguished panel from representing people from all over the world, almost. We're missing Asia, but Asia will come. What I would like to do is start with you, Marina. So you are working at the European Trade Union Confederation, and it would be interesting to get your perspective on what's happening in Europe. We know that in Europe, social protection coverage levels are among the highest in the world, but we also know that the adequacy and the coverage of social protection systems have been compromised in many countries over recent years, especially due to the crisis and austerity that has taken place in the context of this, but also challenges around demographic aging and the emergence of non-standard or what we call precarious forms of work. Now, the European Union has been trying to address some of these issues. And the European Union is interesting because they actually have legislation and recommendations in the area of social protection that apply to all EU 28, soon to be 27 countries. And they recently came up with a council recommendation on access to social protection for workers and the self-employed. So can you tell us a little bit about this, and what is the European Trade Union Confederation's position on all of these developments and on this new recommendation?
Thank you so much for inviting us here and for the question, which is quite broad and comprehensive. I would like to start saying that the European Union has a specific approach to the issues that concern social protection, which we could reconduct to two main frameworks of regulation, okay? The Union, the EU, is a union of states, of member states who maintain their sovereignty. And they have specific rules, agreements among member states. We're not a federal state yet. But actually, there are some rules that regulate the, let's say, the relationship among countries and the trust that countries can have in each other. And this is even more important because not only the European Union has a single market, a single space for freedom of movement and services. Many of the EU countries now have the same currency. We have the euro. So in times of crisis, the austerity measures that Evelyn has mentioned have basically meant not only the consequences of a liberal approach or of an economic trend worldwide. Austerity has been used as the way to establish, re-establish the trust among states that have the same currency, so have the same need to be accountable in terms of internal deficits and debts. And this has brought dramatically the fiscal sustainability issues at the top of the agenda of the member states. Social protection has been basically the first voice on the budget, which has been cut as a consequence of the crisis, of the need of member states' fiscal capacities to stay within the burdens commonly agreed among member states, and have basically suffered the restrictions that the economic juncture imposed. What has this meant? This has meant that a series of services and benefits that people could enjoy have been dramatically reduced. This has meant that in order to keep up employment levels and a certain mobility into the labor market, the part of the remuneration that workers could enjoy
was basically cut, and dramatically a series of new forms of work that didn't foresee any social security benefit within the remuneration package have been developed. The budget that member states had to keep up with healthcare and long-term care necessities of the population, and Europe has a dramatically fast population aging, have been reduced as well. The austerity measures have meant basically keeping up with the fiscal sustainability of the budget, of the public budgets. What has happened in the framework to counterbalance the framework of what we call the European economic governance? 2 years ago, all the member states of Europe and all the institutions of Europe have empowered themselves and the stakeholders to with a proclamation of the so-called European Pillar of Social Rights. The empowerment that this proclamation implies basically means that all the rights that this European Pillar of Social Rights foresees and proclaims as rights of every single individual citizen and resident of the European Union, every single member state, institution, and stakeholder on the ground is basically responsible to guarantee that these rights are enjoyed by people. Counterbalancing with a list of rights and principles, among which we see a whole chapter on social protection, including right to old age protection, right to a minimum income, right to childcare, right to protection against poverty, right to right of people with disabilities, right to essential services. All this package of social protection related rights is now on the table for the member states to be implemented. What does this mean? It means that the recommendation on access to social protection that descends directly from the European Pillar of Social Rights and that provides some concrete indications to give concreteness to these principles is a tool that we can use to rebalance the austerity and fiscal policy trends that the European economic governance had imposed to member states so far. This is basically what the European Trade Union Confederation is trying to do. The Council recommendation aims at giving concreteness to specific principles of the pillar. And it says that social protection rights, social protection entitlements, social protection benefits must be available almost universally to all workers and self-employed. Basically, this coverage has to be not only formal on paper, recognized by legislation, but this coverage also has to be effective. It means that you have to perform a job and you have to get a salary which allows you to put aside an entitlement that one day will give you an adequate pension, an adequate access to healthcare and maternity, for example. The recommendation says that all the benefits that you can get from your job basically have to be also adequate. It means that, unfortunately, a huge majority of women in Europe do not enjoy already these rights. If we take the high objectives of the recommendations into consideration, we see that women do not enjoy high coverage, adequacy, and effectiveness of benefits, in terms of social protection benefits, of course. This means also that many member states in Europe are not even close to the highest standards. What we do is basically to use the tools that the European Union has set in order to monitor progresses and trends in access to social protection, and we try to highlight how the convergence among the European Union member states is still yet to come. And we try to sensibilize governments, the European institutions, both those who are responsible for the social issues, but especially those who are responsible for the economic related issues, that social protection is actually a need for a region which wants to sustainably develop and live in ensure life in dignity to all its citizens and residents. What we basically do is to try to empower our trade union confederations affiliated to us. The European Trade Union Confederation affiliates the national confederations, the democratic national confederations in the different member states. We try to get them on board in order to find arguments and to defend these arguments before their governments in order to push for greater investment, greater, better coverage and level of minimum standards for all, and for the design of social protection policies which are basically and firstly embedded in a better quality of work and jobs.
Thank you very much, Marina, for also explaining the EU architecture in a way that I think is still digestible for people even outside the EU, and for also highlighting the importance of, regional coordination on social policy and convergence, but also the implications of the sort of economic interdependency of EU countries and how that this has led to sort of common approaches when it comes to managing debt and managing public budgets. Now, I would like to turn to another part of the world, to Kenya. We have Damaris Muhika here from COTU Kenya, and I would like to ask you, Kenya has recently introduced a reform that would extend pensions and health coverage to informal workers who were previously excluded. So I would like if you could explain to us this reform in more detail. And I also understand that you were very involved in this process, so maybe you can explain how social partners were involved in the development of this new law.
Thank you. I want to appreciate my participation in the face-to-face interaction. I've been participating through the webinars severally. It's true that the country, Kenya, has experienced several significant reforms in our legislations and policy framework, and especially to include those that has previously been excluded from the social protection system. And just to mention, we have experienced a growth, a significant growth of the informal economy, which stands at 84%. And this is about 19 million of Kenya's workforce. And the informal economy has been excluded from the social protection sector. We also have domestic workers, whom we can define as previously excluded. The non-standard forms of workers, especially the current trend of casualization, outsourced workers. We have workers on contracts, short-term contracts. We have an increase of part-time workers who has been excluded, and the current emergence of the gig economy workers. We have the rural economy workers who have been previously excluded. And also another category is the workers with disability, because the attempt of the country to include those that are the workers that are all the persons with disability has only targeted those that have severe disability, excluding the workers. And also we have not considered coverage of social protection across the life cycle. We have the 0 to 24 years being secluded, and over 65, the elderly. Therefore, meaning that we have an extremely high dependence rate of about 81%, depending especially on those that are working formally. So what have we done as social partners to advocate for reforms in the social protection space? The most significant that I can identify is our review of our constitution in 2010, and it acknowledges social protection as a right. Secondly, we have reviewed our legislations, and especially our principal labor laws, to include issues like workers' injury benefit, to include maternity protection, and also ensure guarantee basic income security. When you look at our development blueprint, the Vision 2030, it was initially anchored in the Millennium Development Goals, and currently also reflects the SDGs, and it highlights some of the reforms that we want to see. On the contributory social protection schemes, and especially the National Social Security Fund, where I sit as a director representing workers, and also the National Health Insurance Fund, we have done significant reviews to make sure that the informal economy workers have been included, and especially they mentioned that the informal economy workers can contribute through voluntary scheme. In 2013, Kenya reviewed its governance structures into devolved units, and you'll find almost all the devolved units, what we call the counties, have county-specific social protection programs. And most of these are very innovative, and they run with the concept of non-conventional social protection systems, or what we had as traditional form of social protection. We have also advocated for empowerment of women and youth, and when you look at our procurement policies, it requires that women and youth be given 30% of government procurement opportunities. We also have reviewed our policy to include people living with disability, whereby the private sector and the public sector is required to ensure that 5% of their recruitment includes persons with disability. We have also a legislation that guides social assistance, and this legislation ensures that made sure that social insurance, social assistance, and cash transfers are embedded in the Ministry of Labor. Currently, we have very relevant social protection initiatives. that we have advocated for as social partners, and this includes a social protection policy that will ensure coordination of several social protection programs to avoid overlapping and multiple dipping. Although this is a political initiative, we were not very much involved as trade unions, but it has a significant role in the social protection space. The current government that is running from 2017 to 2022 has four main agenda that are very relevant to extension of social protection. And that this includes universal health care and affordable housing, including food security. And how has the social partners been involved? When you see a young person, I relate myself with the young people, sitting in the board or representing workers in social security board, that tells you that we have made efforts to make sure that workers are represented in the governance of social protection institutions. Therefore, I can generally say that social dialogue is very elaborate in Kenya, and there is visibility and influence from trade unions. The concept of tripartism has grown, and that's why there's no legislation or policy that is relevant to workers, which can pass or be developed and implemented without workers' participation. When you look at the National Social Security Fund, there's a provision that there's no board that can sit and make a decision without representation of workers. And this has ensured and has increased accountability and also good governance in our social protection institutions. We have also emphasized that the trade unions and workers' representatives have to be involved when we are developing country development initiatives, including the Decent Work Country Program, which we have advocated that the trade unions are given an opportunity to table their priority areas that shape the Decent Work Country Programs. But currently our focus and our priority area is to push for ratification and implementation of Convention 102 fully, and also implementation of ILO Recommendation 202 and Recommendation 204. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Damaris, for explaining all of the reforms that have taken place and also the importance of tripartism in the development of social security reforms, which can also really ensure that these reforms are consensus-based and actually sustainable over the long term. I would like to turn now to Guillermo. Argentina has a very different context. It has historically had some of the highest levels of social protection coverage in Latin America, one of the most developed systems. However, it's undertaken a number of reforms, both parametric and structural, in the context of austerity. So I would like if you could explain to us some of the reforms that have happened in Argentina over the last years, the role of international financial institutions, such as the IMF. We know that they've recently signed in 2018, I believe, the new agreement. And how is CGT responding to this?
I have an hour and a half to speak, right? Just an hour and a half. Okay. Right. That's why I said I was going to be brief, you see, so that I have a few minutes left. Okay. I would like to begin by saying something's very recent. We've just published an article. George Stiglitz which said something like the end of capitalism and the birth of history. And amongst the many things he describes in critical terms, the austerity policy, etc., and the macroeconomic adjustments, he highlights in a part of this book is something which I think is quite apt for the crisis in Argentina. The citizens are told that they can elect the policies that they would like to have. Well, this is adequate social protection, good salaries, progressive taxes, a financial regulated system, et cetera, things which are very sort of common things in our countries. So that's what people say. In the same way, he says, if we do this, then the countries would lose their competitivity and the capital would continue and they would enter into a macroeconomic crisis. Now, I think it's a good example, this literal sentence, Stiglitz, because it shows basically that democracy is at stake if you understand this issue in this way. And that is how it is, and to the point that it is reached that in the recent elections in Argentina, now the chair, who's a president, sorry, is finishing now, finishes with the mandate on the 10th of December, there might be a tremendous result in count against this. And the first reaction that the president had, people made a mistake because of these kinds of elections. And there's going to be more adjustment and more penalization of the world establishment. This having been said, I'm going to begin to outline how we've reached the situation that we've reached today in Argentina. And I think it could be similar to several countries of the region and several countries of the world, which continue with similar policies. So I would like to introduce a topic which I think is inevitable on my part. It's in my personal characteristics compel me to do so, but it's going to lead to making a bit of noise here amongst ourselves, a bit outrageous. So the proposal we have to make, that is seen from the workers' perspective, to move away from this schizophrenia that we are experiencing at a world level. There is a speech in two dimensions. One, the economic order says that we have to adjust, that we have to be useful, et cetera. And on the other hand, in this house and in many of the circles where we do not move, or we're not involved in, then there are rivers of ink that run explaining some issues which are so obvious that's what the people vote on when they have to carry out democracy. For example, based on empirical evidence that indicates that if we increase public expenditure as a percentage of the budget of the GDP, there's going to be a less amount of the population living under the poverty line. This is SDG 1.3 that this conference invites to look at to end with poverty is one of the objectives of the UN, and now the ILO is advocating this in this house. So we've increased the percentage of expenditure, public expenditure, and on social protection. Now, this would have an impact, which is inversely proportionate and on poverty levels. The same could be said if we include the Sigli coefficient, the Gini coefficient. We could say that we're decreasing the percentage of public expenditure, that is, of social protection, as a percentage of the GDP. So there's a reduction. And that would help us to correct the problems of inequality, poverty and inequality, elements which are essential conditions to increase the quality of life of the whole population. Because, of course, if we do this, the establishment doesn't really like this, not very much in any case. I also take part in meetings where many IMF and World Bank civil servants come and saying we made a mistake, they wring their hands, we made a mistake, it was very bad. The fact is that social protection is a good thing. A little bit is good, that's true. But let's not forget that we have to adapt, adjust. And where are they going to adjust? Well, if you look at the photocopies, they don't adjust because it's not profitable. So 60% of public general expenditure, that's where we make adjustments. In the case of Argentina, because of previous policies, we had reached an impact of a social protection, that means pensions and their social security system. That's all. 12%, that represented 12% of the GDP. And that is one of the best in the region, so that you realize we're not just talking about Europe, we're talking about 30% for Europe, etc. 12% is not a bad average. Well, the policy, the austerity policy, which they carried out, adjusted this whole average downward. There was a downward movement for this average. So here in this house, we should remember that Social Security, social protection, outlines a policy in as regards income. It stimulates the aggregate demand, that it alleviates poverty, and it reduces the gaps amongst the citizens, something which in my region, our region, is something which is very expensive as far as we're concerned. We really need to do this. So it's dear to us. So I'm wondering, and I'm asking you, going back to this fact that we're schizophrenic here, if there were any conclusions, what I'm saying is that it's empirical evidence. It's not my opinion. I don't think it's like this. It's tried and tested that it's like this. And it's very useful to reduce these gaps, the ILO, but of course in accordance with the statement, the agreement that they reached with the World Bank and the IMF. Sorry, not the World Bank, IMF. They also recall that this is useful to reduce a gap in income and useful to reduce poverty. And I'm just wondering why. Mr. Hyde, and the beast just can't reach an agreement. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So when they come to our country, they come with a whole huge trunk full saying, adjust, 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 adjust. On the one hand, they say this, and the other, they say that. And in the middle of all this, we the citizens stand. We have the populations who really need social protection, an expansive one, as we have seen in innumerable examples during these past days, where, for example, it's useful. And I just wanted to say something here, which is very illustrative at this point in time, and the times that we're experiencing in Latin America. Today, outcome of globalization, we have access to press media. We can realize very quickly what's happening everywhere. Believe me, and I'm sure you can check this out, it's not just a coincidence that there's a coup in Bolivia. It's not a coincidence what's happened in Ecuador. It's not a coincidence the problems of Colombia days ago. None of this is a coincidence. It's a fruit outcome of the paradox of austerity, a result of reducing, reducing, reducing. And some peoples wake up later. For example, Chile. Let's not forget Chile, important. I think I'm becoming bigger and bigger here in my opinions. But all these questions is that you are imprisoned by the paradox of austerity. When austerity, the only thing it's going to entail is to make a social peace, imperil social peace. So I think it's important to point all this out. If we continue thinking that the most effective adjustment of macro solves and considers something which was said here today in the introduction, and if you think about this and you see Social Security as an expense, an expenditure, not as an investment, and I say it as an economist, I don't think that I love just using words. And I learned this with time, and that's quite important. If we keep talking about expenditure, we believe that the ones who would have to benefit from public policies are the victims. the victimizers in a way. So this is that leads to schizophrenia, as I said previously. So we have to leave this trap aside that adjustments reduces Social Security, because they seen as an expenditure. If you see an expenditure, that's a bad thing. That's what they say. That's exactly what they say, that it's a bad thing. So I think there's something where the workers do have to insist. And I'm going to close here, don't worry. So there has to be more social protection. It's not a bad thing to have more social protection. It's not a bad thing that we extend, broaden social protection. We need to be able to place this in such a way so we can use these provisions of public policies properly. That is increased productivity. Now, that is contrary to the paradox of austerity and the policy of austerity. We can't have an increase in productivity if we shorten or diminish the productive machinery and you make our economy smaller and smaller. There's one kind of adjustment that the multinational bodies propose. Just quickly, when we're talking about pension system, they're quite explicit there to diminish that. But then we have all the others. The people that suggest all this, people that keep cutting any kind of expansion of the productive machinery, and this indirectly affects social protection. Because I said many of our countries have no way of contributing, because the tremendous adjustment of the productive machinery prevents the countries from growing, generate industry and employment. And this affects the financing of social protection. And here, I'm going to end with this, for sure, promise. The workers of the ILO. And here, I think that we, the workers, have a strategic capacity to convince all the constituents. This is not a problem of the workers. This problem of all the constituents. If we don't recreate conditions so that real economy grows, if we don't find a development space so that the economy grows, and with this the social policy grows and social protection increases, then we, the world, and international consensus are going to not really do something about social deterioration, and we're never going to achieve social peace. Thank you.
Gracias, Guillermo.
Thank you, Guillermo.
I'm mindful that we are running low on time, but our very kind interpreters have offered to give us a little bit of flexibility. I'm very grateful, and I promise you that we respect your working time and your work-life balance.
Thank you.
I was going to leave the floor for questions, but I think it would be best to already invite the next group of union speakers, and then hopefully if we have some time, we can leave a time for questions and responses, reactions to everything that has been said at the end. So I would like to invite up Mr. Ramesh Badal, Vice President of Foreign Affairs for GFONT Nepal. And I would equally like to invite up Ms. Rima Nanavati, who is the head of economic and rural development for Sewa India. And finally, we have Mr. Cicero Pereira da Silva, who is the secretary of social policy for the Trade Union Confederation of the Americas, TUCA. So, I will start with you, Ramesh. Nepal has recently implemented a new national social security law. I would like to know if you can explain to us what kinds of protections are included in this law. And we also understand that this law was developed with a very large degree of involvement between unions and workers. So can you tell us a little bit about the consultations and negotiations around this and how this shaped the final version that was adopted?
Thank you very much, Alvin. First of all, in Nepal, we have two types of the social security system. After introduction of the new constitution to 2015, then we term the Social Security Act, Social Security and Contribution-Based Social Security. social security that covers the universal social security system, and that is applicable for all citizens. That is applicable only for citizens. So under that Social Security Act, then they provide the universal old age pension, those who cross the 70 years of their age, that is around 30 US dollar per month. Similarly, maternity benefits, that provides if any childbirth happen in the hospitals, that is the that kind of a grant is provided to promote the childbirth inside the hospital, not in home. That is second. And third is single woman assistance. That is also provided by the government under the Social Security Act. Fourth, those who suffer by the disability. Disability grant is also provided by the government. And fifth, that is the victim of the armed conflict and a democratic movement. They are also receiving some sort of the assistance. Six, the persons belong to the boards of extensions. So they are also getting some sort of the assistance. That is under the universal coverage of the social security system. And similarly, we have Universal Health Coverage Act. That is the separate one. And for that purpose, the every family should contribute around $25 per year, and they will get the some 100,000 equivalent health facilities. So that is the contribution based. And these are the all the universal coverage. When we are talking about the contribution based social security, that is applicable for the workers. And we are involved as a trade unionist. We fight for a long time, and we initiated our dialogue with the employer organization and the government since 2000. And it took around 17 years to complete, to come into the implementation. So though we have sometimes up and down, sometimes conflict, and sometimes insurgency, sometimes the transition, but our efforts was continue. And ultimately, we sign an agreement with the employer organization, each and every provision of the Labor Act and the Social Security Act, and that categorically mention irrespective of the minimum threshold of the employment status, and irrespective of their employment condition, whether that is the contractual or daily base or part-timers, whatever, all workers are entitled to get contribution-based social security benefits. That is agreed between the all stakeholders. And based on that, we developed the new Social Security Act. Under that act, the workers are entitled to get four types of the benefit. Number one, that is the Medicare and maternity benefit that is clubbed together. Second is accidental and disability. So that accidental covers not only the workplace accident, that is extended for all type of the accident. And that also covers the occupational disease as well. And disability, as per the ILO Convention 102, so facility has been provided to the disabled persons, those who injured during the time of the accident and other things. And third is the dependents benefits. Children below the 21 years, they are entitled to get benefits under that system. And second, the spouse, if he or she is not able to get alternative employment, then they are also benefited under this system. And last and most debatable is the old age benefit we have. So previously, we have the provident fund system and the severance pay system. So we bring these two clubs together and introduce the new pension scheme. And now the some of the workers, they have some questions on it, and new workers, those who are coming to the labor market, they have also raised the same questions. Why we should introduce the pension? We want to continue the old type of the provident fund and gratuity system like that. That debate is going on, but as a trade union leader of Nepal and the responsible citizen of the Nepal, we want to introduce the pension system. and we will try to continue our efforts to convince the, our workers, our employers, and all policymakers in Nepal. So till date, we started collection of contribution from the last July. We introduced campaign the last 27th of the November. Today is the second Social Security Day of Nepal. We observe today in Kathmandu and throughout the country. So within this year, we are able to bring 115,000 workers inside the Social Security fold. So that is the our efforts. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for explaining this these major reforms that took a lot of time. 17 years is not easy, but finally the end result is making an enormous difference in terms of protections and security for workers in Nepal. I would like to turn now to you, Rima. And I would like if you could speak about India, because we know that there's the large majority of workers in India are informal, and SEWA has been doing amazing work in terms of organizing informal workers and also providing essential services to them. But you've also very much engaged in the reforms at national level. Can you tell us a little bit what SEWA is doing to promote social protection coverage for informal workers?
Thank you so much. I'll be very brief, keeping tab on the watch, and we all need to rush back as well. I would talk about what SEWA is doing, but I would also like to talk about what still yet needs to be done. And SEWA organizes the informal sector workers, and what I will be sharing here is on behalf of the 1.7 million members of SEWA. And we at SEWA believe that poverty is the worst form of violence perpetuated with the consent of the society. So we also believe that to be poor is to be vulnerable, and poverty makes one become a chronic victim of forces beyond one's control. So with every misfortune, problems compound, leaving one increasingly powerless and setting in motion a spiral descent into starker poverty. And in such situation, I think to protect the informal sector workers from this vicious circle of debt and poverty, there is definitely a need for social protection instruments. And I think SEWA was way ahead of the national government. It was almost 3.5 decades ago that when an agriculture worker, a member of SEWA, had to return back to the fields on the very third day of her maternity or a childbirth, or when a vegetable vendor defaulted in paying back her loans to SEWA Bank, we realized that the women workers do need social protection. And that's how we started our own savings-linked insurance program. We now have our full-fledged insurance cooperative. My colleague sitting here can talk at length if we have the time. We also provide with life insurance, accidental insurance, health insurances, family insurance package as well. We also have our pension program as well. And I'm very happy to say that it was the national government that learned from SEWA's experience and, you know, from the model of SEWA, and now it's rolled out nationally. So we have the health coverage that the government gives to all the workers, including the informal workers. How much is the outreach is yet to see. It also provides pension program to all the workers in the country, including the informal workers as well. But also, I would like to say that, you know, when it comes to the informal sector workers, I will right now focus more on the rural workers who rely on multiple jobs for their survival. And in such a situation where also there's no employer-employee relationship, they also have to change their inventories 9 to 12 times in a year as well. What kind of social protection is needed and who pays for it? Is it the workers and the governments, or what kind of a mechanism, what kind of instruments are needed? I would like to talk here about the small farmers, the salt miners, the forest workers. And I think what they need social protection measures is also against the climate shocks and the market shocks as well. So I think our experience therefore calls for a social protection which is holistic, which is integrated. So it takes care of, and it needs a life cycle approach to social protection. So it calls for insurance against sicknesses, against accidents, against occupational health hazards, credit risk, because as I mentioned earlier, with one episode, the worker is not able to, you know, meet with the repayment requirements of the credit, the climate risks and the market risks, and with the small assets that these workers own, how do you also insure their assets? So this is the kind of whole holistic life cycle approach to social protection that is needed when it comes to the informal sector workers and especially the rural workers amongst the informal sector workers. And I think in India also the large majority of the workers are in the rural areas, and so is SEWA's membership. Almost 70% of our membership is also in the rural areas. So I would just end here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rima, for pointing out the need for really comprehensive sets of support. And also, I think it was really interesting to see how SEWA was really ahead of the government in terms of creating a lot of crucial protections for workers that then inspired, actually, the rollout at national level.
Just one point I missed out, and I think when we talk of social protection, we are narrowing it down just to insurance, pension, and, you know, healthcare services. But I think when it comes to the informal sector workers, we also need to look at their livelihood recovery mechanisms against the climate shocks and the market shocks. And that is what SEWA is now piloting. How do you set up an agriculture livelihood recovery fund, or for the informal sector workers who are working off-farm, what kind of livelihood recovery funds, what kind of stabilization funds are required, and then how do you bring the investors? So how do you enter into the mainstream market to have these kind of funds? So I think the social protection in terms of informal sector workers goes beyond these things and also needs to protect them against their, to secure their livelihoods as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So now you've listened a lot, but I think that many of you likely have reactions, responses based on what is happening in your own countries, your own context. So I would like to open up the floor now. Mr. Pereira will make the closing remarks afterwards. But first, I would like to open up the floor. Does anyone wish to make any reactions to the panelists here or the panelists previously? I see one from Baba Ai PSI. Are there others? And one from Heis WSM. And I see one in the back from Domestic Workers of Mexico. Let's take these three first, and then we'll see about the timing. So, Baba Ai, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Due to time, I would want to focus strictly on something that kind of emerged from the Butra Kyle's presentation and that of the sister from, I think, the ETUC. And this has to do with the issue of innovative financing for social protection, and which states and several non-state actors are advancing. And we strongly are of the view that there's the need to clearly take a stand against this, because the evidence shows that, I mean, social protection is not affordable argument, is not tenable. And, I mean, the issue is about prioritization. There are several alternatives that have been presented. I mean, reallocation of public expenditures, increasing in tax revenues, expanding social security coverage and contributory revenues, eliminating illicit financial flows, particularly with, you know, countries in the global south, but not only them. So using fiscal and foreign exchange reserves amongst others. So the long and short of this for us is that it is almost impossible to win the argument when we subscribe to the logic of, because for us this is part of advancing the same neoliberal paradigm of development that got us to where we are. 10 years after the global crisis, where they have kept telling us that the remedy is more of the medication that got us into the state of social illness, we should be bold in presenting the fact that innovative, using this grammar of innovative financial, which to us essentially is a wolf in sheep clothing, you know, and about expanding scope of for-profit interest in social protection mechanisms. So we think it is quite important to stress the need for, public systems and provision of social protection. Thank you.
Heiss?
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm not going to share an example of my country, Belgium, but just to give my congratulations to all these wonderful, beautiful examples and experiences of trade unions working on realizing the right to social protection. I think for us, WSM and the thematic network on the right to social protection, which we are a little bit creating here in Geneva as well with a lot of trade unions, present here, it's very important to be in this workers' network, because especially in those continents, in Africa, in Latin America, in Asia, we are promoting a strategy of joining forces, trade unions with other social movements, with other social organizations, reaching out to those workers who are nowadays not yet in a trade union, but organizations who are also working on realizing the right to social protection. And it would be really a pleasure, because a lot of countries are present here, Indonesia, Dominican Republic, I see Burkina Faso, Rwanda, where trade unions are joining forces with our other social movements. I think it would be a pleasure to share with you some good examples, some good experiences where these collaborations resulted in real policy changes on national level. So it might be an idea for a next meeting. It would be a pleasure for us to share with you some good examples. Thanks.
Thank you. Madame Bautista from Mexico.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this meeting. I want to talk about trade union in Mexico, but also at the global level. Domestic workers have won an important space through the International Domestic Workers Confederation, and thanks to Convention 109, it's united us at the world level. However, only 25 countries have ratified the convention, 15 of them from Latin America, and it's important too, I think, that trade unions in your countries promote the ratification of this convention. 67 million of us need the coverage of social protection. We're neglected by law, by the laws. They put us in a special department, which means we're discriminated against under law, because we don't have the same rights as other workers. It's important to talk about investment in coverage for social security for workers, but it's also a right. It has to be granted. It's a right. Domestic workers also need this right too. We just need an opportunity, a platform. And we made great progress. After 19 years in Mexico, we managed to change the law to give us the same rights as everyone else. The
There's a special court on social security, and it gave social security to all workers, including us. Thank you.
I'm going to give the floor to one more person, Madame Francisca Jimenez from the Dominican Republic, and then unfortunately I will have to hand the floor to Mr. Pereira da Silva for closing, only because I do not want to exploit the generosity of our very kind translators.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. I won't speak for very long, but I would like to take a few minutes, first of all, to express my thanks for the effort that has been made to organize this group and bring together ideas on how to extend social security so it covers everyone in the world. I'm not going to talk about AmuSol because yesterday I had a speech on that, and I expect a lot of you know about the initiative by the trades unions in the Dominican Republic to push for social protection for those who are excluded from it. And I even think that these initiatives are giving a kind of lesson to governments, because there's a universal law in my country. But that extends to the formal sector, not the informal sector. However, I think that the efforts made by, say, unions to show that everyone should be covered by social security, and I here come back to what Guillermo said about rhetoric, rather than costs, it's an investment. So this prompts governments to talk about changing the system and extending this coverage to workers in the informal economy. But there are different kinds of work covered here. We've got the Convention on Domestic Workers adopted, but now we have to fight for it to be ratified. It's important that the international network work well, but the national ones in each country, the national networks, are very important too, because it's in each country that you have to fight for change. We participate in our national network as a trade union, together with universities, the ministries, the NGOs, and with civil society organizations that are all pushing the theme of social protection. And now with the social protection network for the whole continent, this network works in various Latin American countries and with other continental organizations. And I think that it's from there that we'll achieve the changes that we all aspire to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So now we've had, I think, quite a rich exchange, and unfortunately we can't continue it, even though I think that there would be others that would love to share their perspectives on this. But I would like to give the floor now to Mr. Cicero Pereira da Silva, Secretary of Social Policies at the Confederation of Trade Unions for the Americas, who has been diligently taking notes throughout this discussion and will be offering some conclusions to this meeting.
Gracias.
Thank you, Evelyn. I'm very grateful for the invitation to this event. We've had a very rich discussion, and I've noted down 5 or 6 important points that should be clarified and that will sum up what happened at this first meeting. Taking up this point on schizophrenia, which often happens with subjects such as this. I saw two impressive examples of this yesterday. The representative of the government of Brazil
was talking about universal coverage. But last month, they were trying to change that coverage in Brazil. So what they're saying abroad is quite different from what they're saying at home. And then again, the representative of the Brazilian employers talked about the family coverage, family fund. But that's another example of the schizophrenia that we're talking about. So I think something that's been mentioned a lot during the past 1.5 hours is social and labor coverage as a human right. Also, the defense of a comprehensive and solidarity model of social protection under the responsibility of the state with possible support from the private sector. On tripartite participation in the control of the social security, social protection coverage, that workers should not only defend the tripartite social security system, but we should also be also to check on how it's working. There's been a lot of talk, too, about continuing to promote the ratifications and implementation of Convention 102 and the recommendation. Strengthening of health coverage and renewed collective bargaining is important because on the subject of social security, women in the area of social security, women sometimes get a raw deal. So it's important to have a special, give them special attention too. And then defense of international legal standards that guarantee social security for migrants. There's been a lot of talk about this in Ibero-America.
We couldn't have gone on with all these social problems in the region of the Americas, where we have the greatest low social level in the world. Now, when I look at my country, 6 families handle 50% of the country's wealth, and these 6 families continue without they don't have to pay the same taxes as others. And when we continue with that model, we continue with the neoliberal perspective, as it be said here, and we don't change anything, and we don't change the system, Social Security is still is going to be in a bad situation. Money is lacking, and they cannot pay for the people who are hungry, go hungry, and they don't have social protection, and that's more than 55% of the world. Thank you.
Muchas gracias. Obrigada.
Thank you.
So thank you, everyone, very much for coming. Just 2 points of logistics. Mr. Pereira da Silva has been so kind also to offer to summarize a bit the proceedings of this meeting tomorrow afternoon in the closing segment, so we're very grateful for this. The second thing is that if you would like, before leaving, to take a photo, we will do a group photo just outside here. And I hope that this meeting is really an opportunity to continue to meet in person and to exchange, and that the next one we have more time for a lively debate. Huh? Okay, have a very good evening and see
you
outside.
You too.